afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. You are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on Thursday, September 22nd, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about this Friday and Saturday's Alaska Preparedness Expo with guest Tom Matisse. Rebecca Noon in Boston will be here to discuss Perseverance Theater's production of The 39 Steps. We'll learn what to do with your junk and how to turn it into art with our guest Mary M. Kim McNaughton from Canvas. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with news and views about local arts during Arts Up. That's today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, slight chance of showers in the evening, then rain increasing. Later on, low temperatures around 44 degrees. Forecast for Friday, more rain with high temperatures around 52 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 51 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. House Republicans are ramping up efforts to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or ANWR, to oil drilling, which has split Native groups in Alaska. Matt Laszlo reports on a House committee hearing Wednesday on Capitol Hill.
House Republicans say to bring down soaring gas prices, the U.S. needs to expand domestic oil drilling, and they say ANWR could produce billions of dollars worth of oil. But the Kuchin tribe strongly opposes the plan to open up what they call a sacred wildlife refuge to drilling. Fenton Rexford is the tribal administrator for the native village of Kedivik. He told lawmakers that his tribe supports the effort to drill because it will create jobs.
Yes, we've heard a lot from the Kuchin, the ones that are over the continental divide, and we respect their opinion. We've lived and worked, we're neighbors, and I wish they would do the same and respect our opinion.
Then there's the potential environmental impact of drilling. David Jenkins, who is with Republicans for Environmental Protection, says drilling in ANWR poses risks to its fragile ecosystem.
The refuge's coastal plain is its biological heart, and it is disingenuous to claim that oil exploration can be done there with minimal impact.
With Democrats in control of the Senate and the House in the hands of the GOP, the debate is sure to rage on for at least this session of Congress. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington, D.C.
Several tribal communities are receiving federal funds for housing and economic development work. The funds are meant to benefit low-income residents in those communities. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The Crow Creek Housing Authority and the Oglala Sioux Housing Authority will split $2 million in grant money. The funds are coming from the Department of Housing and Urban Development's Indian Community Development Block Grant Program. Officials say the grant money can be used to rehabilitate housing, purchase land for new housing construction, and in a few cases for new housing construction. Funds can also be awarded for community facilities, including roads, water and sewer construction, and community buildings, and economic development opportunities. Rick M. Garcia, HUD's regional manager, says the competitive grants will help tribal community leaders with local development and affordable housing. HUD Secretary Sean Donovan says there are widespread housing and infrastructure concerns across Indian country. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
The New York State Senate holds the first hearing in a new Native American committee. State senators and tribal leaders focused on economic development issues during the hearing in the Senate Standing Committee on State Native American Relations. Wednesday's meeting was mostly an introduction, with Native nations giving a brief overview of their history and culture to the committee. The hearing in Albany also focused on the current economic development activities and future opportunities of New York tribes. The committee's chair, Senator George Maziar, says their mission is to become informed and educated about New York tribes to improve relations between them and the state. Richard Nephew, chairman of the Seneca Nation Council, called the meeting historic. Nephew says there's an urgent need for productive dialogue between tribes and the state. He says for too long, the state has attempted to make decisions that impact Senecas without having an understanding about their history, culture, and sovereign treaty rights. There are 9 nations recognized by New York, with more than 100,000 Native Americans living in the state. The leader of the Navajo Nation testified before the United Nations Wednesday in Switzerland. President Ben Shelley urged the Human Rights Council for their assistance in protecting the San Francisco Peaks. The Arizona Mountains are held sacred by tribes. Shelley asked the committee to compel the U.S. to revoke authorization for the use of recycled water for recreational purposes on the peaks. On this day in 1866, the Shoalwater Bay Indian Reservation was established by executive order. According to the Shoalwater Bay Tribe of Washington, there were holdouts who refused to relocate to other reservations. The reservation was set aside with the intent that those last holdouts would have their own reserve lands. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxby, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is Tom Matisse. He's the Emergency Programs Coordinator for the City and Bureau of Juneau here to talk about the Southeast Alaska Preparedness Expo. Tom, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Well, thanks for having me out, Jeff.
So I guess in general, how prepared is Juneau?
Oh, you know, we're pretty fortunate that we don't have a lot of hazards. They do in a lot of places in the nation. We've got a lot of great community service organizations that work together on a regular basis, and I think we're pretty well prepared. We can always be more ready, and that's what we're going to talk about.
What are the hazards that we have to worry about as far as Juneau goes?
Oh, you know, we always worry about big things that can affect the city. Cruise ships are obviously one of them. A big airplane could be another. But we could always have a flood. We could have avalanches. We have lots of different things that could affect the community. But the main thing is just being prepared in general.
What are the typical holes in a typical family's plan?
You know, a lot of times just the lack of a plan. But reality, too, is when they have a reunification point, it's really important to have that reunification point be someone outside of town, because someone in town may also be affected, may not have good communications, and may be busy dealing with their own thing. So I really like to stress that when they do build a family reunification plan, that they make that point of contact somebody outside of town.
How possible is it to be 100% prepared?
Oh, we're never 100% prepared, but if you can take little steps along the way, it'll make it that much better.
So the expo is going on tomorrow and Saturday at the Centennial Hall. Sounds like a big event going on.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event. We've got 40-plus exhibitors coming out. We've got presentations for 2 days in 4 different training rooms with lots of different time slots to choose from, duplicate schedules on some of the programs for both days so people can make sure and get everything that they want to hear about.
And why was it organized in the way it was?
September is Preparedness Month nationally, and here in Alaska we like to be extra prepared, recognizing we deal with a lot of winter weather conditions and other things, so we thought it was a great time to showcase the strength and support of the Juneau community service organizations.
And the hours on Friday and Saturday?
Friday is from noon to 6, and Saturday from 10 to 4.
What are some of the ways that people can attend the Preparedness Expo?
Well, tomorrow in the newspaper, you'll see coming out a complete listing of events. It's got a complete program in there. Talks about all the exhibitors, talks about all the time slots for all the different presentations that they can hit. So that's a great way to learn more about the event. Once again, it's a free event. Come on out and check it out. You'll be wanting to spend a lot of time to see all the booths and all the offerings.
How about a sample of some of the classes offered?
Oh, gosh, there's first aid, there's financial planning, there's planning for pets, there's what to do with your prescriptions to make sure you have enough of them and keep them around, all kinds of good stuff.
Any presentation is about an hour long?
No, you know, they vary from 15 minutes to over an hour, but there's quite a few to select from, including different events in the community. You know, what would happen if Salmon Creek Dam broke, or what would happen in other large events. So we try and talk some of those things through. We talk about the alert warning system. We just really want people to be aware of things that affect Juneau and how we can be prepared for them.
And this is all free?
100%.
Should people plan on spending the whole day there?
Well, you know, you can come for 15 minutes and check out part of it, but I think you'll want to spend more time than that. There's definitely a lot to see.
You say there's 40 booths?
Yeah, there's more than 40 booths in the exhibit hall, as well as all the presentations in the breakout training rooms.
Who are some of the booths?
Oh, gosh. Police, Fire, Red Cross, Gastineau Humane Society, Costco, Willie's Marine will have a boat there. The Coast Guard will have a boat for the kids to climb on and check out. There's all kinds of different vendors.
Besides the plan to meet outside of Juneau, what are some of the other things families should worry about?
Oh, you know, having a 7-day preparedness kit is always a good thing to have. We'd like to have people have 7 days of food and water on hand at all times. So a gallon of water a day for those 7 days, plus the basic kinds of food you like to eat already. So it's just a matter of looking at your shelf stocks and thinking about it a little bit and going a little bit deeper and having it prepared in a fashion that you can utilize it to go away if you need to.
Doesn't the U.S. government have a website called Ready?
Ready.gov.
And what do they talk about?
Once again, you want to get a kit, You want to make a plan. You want to be informed. So it's all about building personal preparedness. And there's lots of great information there with links to just about everything you need to know.
And to encourage attendance, you're giving away prizes.
Most definitely. We've got some great door prizes there. We've got a lot of vendors that contributed to the event. We're going to be giving away preparedness kits, all kinds of stuff. So there's probably over 25 items in the drawing to choose from.
And on Monday, we're going to have you back at 3:45 on the show to talk about how it went and maybe some planning for winter time.
Excellent. Sounds great. We look forward to being here, Jeff.
Tom Atis, is there anything you'd like to add or I forgot to ask?
Well, it's just a great event. We look forward to having a lot of people out. All the community service providers involved are showcasing what they can do to help the community, and we'd really like to come out and have you all involved.
And I noticed it in the paper yesterday, the whole schedule, as well as tomorrow. Is there a website people can go to find out more information?
Nope, just in the newspaper tomorrow. I'll have a complete brochure with the listing and program.
And Tom Atis, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
I need somebody, help, not just anybody, help, you know I need someone, help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind, I'll open up the doors.
Thirteen, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Robin Gray Davis, Rebecca Noon, and Boston here to talk about the Perseverance Theater's production of The 39 Steps, which opens up tomorrow. Thank you, everybody, for being on the show with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
So for people that didn't read the paper this morning about the production, Boston, you want to give us a rundown of the general concept of the play?
Sure, yeah. This play was started back in the mid-90s by these two sort of inventive actors, who took the challenge of trying to perform John Buchan's novel, The 39 Steps, with just four actors. It grew over time. They performed it in some small theaters in England, and then producers picked it up, asked Patrick Barlow to adapt it, who then included 1935 Alfred Hitchcock film, also based on the book, but much different. And he took more from that and then included what he likes to say, things that he just thought were funny. It's still performed with just four actors.
Now, Hitchcock movies are known as comedies, but how do you keep the suspense going while still getting the laughs?
Well, the show is actually, what's fun about the show is that it does take sort of the magic of theater. I mean, in terms of taking a movie and trying to put it on stage and sort of showing the power of theater. It's not really a, you know, us versus them kind of a thing, but it's like, how would you put a train chase on top of a train? How would you stage that? How would you stage a chase in a car, or various different other, you know, elements of that kind of a film? How do you put that on stage? And so it's really sort of about the magic of the theater. And then it's also sort of an homage to Hitchcock and sort of what he did. So it's not, you know, in terms of like using some suspenseful music and then taking sort of the what, not necessarily caricatures, but definitely the characters that we know from all the different suspense movies and kind of sending it up a little bit and sort of enjoying the humor of that. And also the struggle of these four actors to put this show on. The concept that the play has in it is that there's one actor playing our hero, Richard Hannay. There's a female actor who plays all of his various love interests. And then there's two what they call clowns who play everybody else. And Robin might be able to speak about, you know, sort of, I think we lose count of how many actual characters there are in the play. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of characters in this play that, that the clowns play. So, Robin, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's been a great process, very inventive to try and take this show and make it our own here. One thing that Boston said really early in rehearsal as our director was that this show is really a celebration of theater because it challenges us as performers and the audience to really delve deep into our imaginations to imagine this train, this train sequence, and to see the chase that's going on, even though we just use a few trunks and a few props to convey that story. But yeah, Jed Hancock Brainerd and I play the two actors that play several parts of dozens of different characters that help to propel the story along. And it's quite a wonderful challenge to do that. We have a lot of quick changes. And
with some of which happen right before your eyes. You know, they go back and forth between various different characters using just hats or a simple prop or, you know, a coat or not a coat, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's super fun to do. And yeah. We just had our second preview last night, and I just had jumped up into the lobby to say hello to someone, and someone else in the lobby had said, how do you have so much energy after what you just did? But it's contagious, that joy in the theaters. So.
There's a funny note in the script sort of later near the end of the play where things kind of just get bat wacky, and the playwright notes that you need very strong physical actors and that weight loss will probably happen just because of how much they're traveling all over the stage
Olympic,
and around.
Actors of Olympic strength.
Yeah,
or
yeah, Olympic strength, yeah. So it's very, I mean, it's sort of, and then the conceit that we added on top of it in terms of performing it in Perseverance's space, which is, was the theater that was built the way it was, but it sort of models kind of a warehousey or, you know, converted kind of space and doesn't have much wing space. And so it was the thought of like, okay, what are we going to do with this? So Sheila Wine, who's the set designer, and I came up with this idea that what if this is, we add on top of it that they're not just performing this show, but they're also doing it sort of in an abandoned theater so that everything they use has sort of come from down in the basement or, you know, is already on stage and there's a giant pile of stuff and things just sort of come from the pile and there's a hole in the stage and so they kind of have to navigate around this and the wackiness ensues around that. So it's been really fun, that challenge to sort of add those elements to it. And it's the actors in this are Olympic actors in terms of the feats they have to perform. We should talk about that a little bit in terms of these four actors form a company called Strange Attractor. And Rebecca, why don't you talk about what you guys do normally and then how we applied that process to this particular show?
Or abnormally.
Yeah, right. Well, the four of us met while we were getting degrees in actor-created theater, which we've been on the show and talked about that a couple times now with you, Jeff. And basically, we just generate our own plays. So we write plays from improvisations and physical-based pieces that then the language sort of develops from the body. So coming in and playing all four of these characters together as a company with Boston directing us has been such a treat because we're definitely utilizing the skills that we learned in grad school about transforming space. That's how we were able to make a train. That's how we, you know, we kind of all know how to do that, but we get to come into this architecture that's already there for us instead of normally we approach an empty space of nothing and go kind of beat our heads against the wall going, what do we want to do? What do we want to do? And from there, the creative process happens. But so to be able to work up this entire play with this awesome architecture before us and a director and designers and this whole team in a matter of a month, I don't know,
is that how long we've been in rehearsal?
Is so pleasurable because we can use those tools toward this other end.
And is this the first time, this is the first time you guys have worked as a company on a sort of text-based script? And in terms of, you've used scripts to sort of jump off of, but in terms of the four of you performing in something together.
We've never done this before.
So when I...
We've been in plays before, just not together.
Right. No, and so when I knew that going in, it was like, okay, let's take the process that they might normally use in terms of their improvisation. And so the first couple of days of rehearsal are all about just sort of physical play and sort of discovering the train, discovering different things that we might do in various different scenes and just kind of trying to incorporate that process so we didn't just jump right into, you know, sort of staging the thing. It was kind of like, let's explore and find this. And then even in the discovery of staging, there's all kinds of, you know, times of let's figure out what we can do physically here and just sort of playing with that and kind of taking things to the extreme, you know. And then if we need to pull back, we pull back. But it's definitely, once you get on the train, as it were, you know, the show just sort of, you know, it doesn't stop. It just keeps going and gets crazier and crazier.
Is there an intermission?
Yes, there is, yeah.
So it does stop for a little while.
It stops for a break. You gotta give a chance. You gotta give the audience a chance to breathe.
And the actors.
Where does the comedy come from? Is it slapstick? Is it intellectual?
That's a good question. I think the script is really, it's really tight in terms of the way the jokes are written, in terms of the rhythm of the script. But I think it allows for and requires a great sense of physical play and comedy as well.
Can I say something about Alfred Hitchcock in
general?
Yes. Actually, that goes back to your first question. In the research material, actually, that Boston provided with us at the beginning, I read this quote from Alfred Hitchcock in this pile of stuff, where he said that he believes comedy belongs in suspense, and in his films, you have to follow up some intense moment with something light, or you have to have something light followed by the intense. And so I've been watching some Hitchcock since then with that lens and realizing that his movies are so, they're so scary and then there's something so goofy. Mm-hmm. So in some ways I feel like that's the comedy of the show also, is that we do delve into some dark-ish places or some scarier things if you were looking at it in a lens of reality. But there's always something light that's playing off of that, and the comedy is fast and it's witty. And it's physical, you know.
What do you think Alfred Hitchcock would think about the production?
I think he would love it.
He would love it.
I mean, I think he's. He was known for his suspense movies, but he also was known for having sort of a wicked sense of humor. Mm. And you can see that even in the sort of the when he introduces or ends the, you know, his old show, Alfred Hitchcock's Presents. I mean, he was definitely wickedly funny.
Does one have to be familiar with Alfred Hitchcock movies to fully enjoy the play?
I don't think so. No, I think
does
what
it help?
It would. I mean, if you're a fan of Hitchcock, I think you're going to really enjoy all the references that are put in place in terms of some iconic images from various movies that he did, and that's part of the fun of the play. But I think it's also, as Robin was talking about, in terms of the magic of the theater. I mean, it's really sort of celebrating that, and if you love theater, then you're going to love this show, and you will then get introduced to Hitchcock, and then also the people who don't know Hitchcock might, you know, sort of a younger generation might get exposed to that and then go back and watch the films besides, say, Psycho or, you know, some of the more famous ones and go back to some
and
of those earlier ones.
Say you really don't need to know anything to enjoy this show.
That's true.
Come and there's something for everyone in this. So
it moves fast, and it's, I think it's really fun to watch, judging by the preview audiences. And even, I have to say, this is one of the first shows that I've ever been in where even in tech, the production crew was laughing at what was happening on stage, and they'd seen stuff a million times.
Yeah.
So that was pretty awesome.
I'm talking with director at Boston and actors Robin Gray Davis and Rebecca Noon about the play The 39 Steps, which opens up tomorrow at Perseverance Theater. We talked a little bit about the difficulties of the characters and getting dozens and dozens of characters in four people. What about the stage and lighting challenges?
Yeah, well, you know, you want to invoke, I think, in terms of the staging, you want to give that space. And then the lighting, you know, I think comes from a place of shadows and you know, stark imagery, and but still being, you know, part of a comedy. So it's sort of the balance of that. We've been trying to find that, striking that balance in terms of how that goes and helping to support the drive of the show.
And the sound design?
The sound design is great. I mean, there's all the. I mean, it's a giant sound design. I think overall there's probably, you know, I think at this count we're at like 200 and something light cues, maybe almost 300 light cues, and then there's over 100 sounds in this in terms of cues, and then there's tons of music, of course, that's referenced throughout.
And Riley Woodford.
Yeah, Riley Woodford is the sound designer, and he's been fantastic.
What's been the most fun working on the play, Roblin?
The most fun, probably just working with this ensemble and looking at how can we not quite out of nothing, but how can we interpret this scene together in as a creative and imaginative way as possible. That whole creative process and rehearsal I really enjoy, so that's been great. And I'm looking forward, though, to having a real audience there instead of making Boston laugh at us all the time and trying.
Rebecca, how about you?
As a side note, small side note, usually when we invent shows, I do like to play funny characters who are funny looking, and my mother is always going, "You're so much prettier, and you always make yourself look so weird, and why do you always do that?" So it's really fun in this show because I'm given the script where I have to be three different like love interests. And so actually it's been really fun to put on and work on being really attractive in a play, because it's not something I would normally give myself permission to do. And my favorite is the German spy that I play.
Yeah.
I love her.
One of the joys of watching Alfred Hitchcock movies is seeing if you could see the director in making a cameo appearance. Is that something people should be watching for, Boston?
Well, you should be watching not necessarily for me, but I think you should definitely be watching for the man that we're sort of honoring, yes.
All right. Dates and show times?
It opens tomorrow, the 23rd of September, at 7:30 p.m. It runs through October 16th. Thursday through Sunday. There are still two pay-what-you-can performances. There's one this Sunday, and there's also one next Thursday. Of course, tickets are available, you know, at Hearthside Books and on the perseverancetheater.org, or you can call 463-TIXS. Most performances are in the evening. I think there's one matinee the last Sunday, I believe. Yeah.
Is this for all ages?
I think it's really appropriate for, I would say, I think young kids, like 6 years old, probably would not get it as well. But I think like you're 10 and up, like your preteens and your teens, I think they're really going to fall in love with the theater when they see this kind of performance. There's nothing that's, you know, age inappropriate. There's no language that's really that bad. And, it's just really a good time.
Aaron does say crikey.
He does take crikey, so if you have a problem with that word, then yeah, stay away.
Well, I should have said you were going to use that word on the radio.
Oh, sorry.
We're on delay.
Can you bleep
though.
It later?
Yeah.
No problem. We'll do it in the next town.
Yeah.
I've been talking with Rebecca Noon, Roblin Gray Davis, and Boston about the 39 Steps Perseverance Theater's opening production for their 33rd year of doing business. Capital City, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, September the 22nd, 2011. 1888, on this day, the National Geographic magazine came out for the first time. A scientific journal, no photographs, published for the 165 members of the National Geographic Society. 1692, on this date, 8 citizens of the colony of Massachusetts were hanged for their connections to witchcraft, the last of the deaths caused by the Salem witch trials. There had been 11 other hangings. There were 5 who died in prison, 1 who was crushed to death because she refused to enter a plea. The trials took place over the spring and summer of 1692, after two young girls began displaying unusual behavior, convulsing and shouting blasphemous things and acting like they were possessed, the daughter and the niece of a minister named Samuel Paris. And then several other girls in town began acting strangely, and they named individuals as the cause, the ones who had bewitched them. Dozens of people, women, men, children, accused of and often jailed for practicing or supporting witchcraft. Many of the accusations seemed to fall along the lines of existing feuds or were directed at people who, because they were poor or they were not members of the church, they lived on the margins, they were not likely to be able to defend themselves. By the time these final eight were hanged on this day in 1692, people across Massachusetts were talking about the trials, and within weeks, the governor declared spectral evidence was inadmissible, and then he barred any further arrests. He disbanded the local court, released many of the accused, but it wasn't until the following spring that he finally pardoned those who were still in jail. It's the birthday of the novelist Rosamund Pilcher, born Cornwall, England, 1924, author of romance novels, popular women's fiction, best known for her book 1985, The Shell Seekers. It's the birthday of the author Faye Weldon, born Worcestershire, England, 1931, grew up in New Zealand, author of The Life and Loves of a She-Devil. And it was on this day in 1862 President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, which put the Confederacy on notice of his intention to free the slaves. They had until January 1st, he said, to lay down their arms, and after that, any slave within a rebelling state would be thenceforward and forever free. It did not free all slaves, however. Those who were in border states would remain slaves. The Confederate states had no interest in this compromise that he offered, and so the proclamation took effect on January 1st. Here's a poem by Jane Hirschfield, Three-Legged Blues. Always you were given one too many, one too few. What almost happens doesn't. What might be lost, you'll lose. The crows will eat your garden. Weeds will get what's left. Your cats will be three-legged. Your house's mice be blessed. One friend will take your husband, another wear your dress. No, it isn't what you wanted. It isn't what you'd choose. Your floors have always slanted. Your roof has paid its dues. Life delivered you a present, a too small pair of shoes. What almost happened won't now. What can be lost, you'll lose. Three-Legged Blues by Jane Hirschfield from Come Thief, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly Editor's Podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
In celebration of International Year of Forests, the U.S. Forest Service, Alaska Wilderness League, National Forest Foundation, and Braided River announced an exhibition from photographer Amy Gulick's book, Salmon in the Trees, Life in Alaska's Tongass Rainforest, September 27th through October 29th at the Jack. The opening reception, September 27th, starts at 5:30, followed by a presentation by Gulick. Visit myalaskaforests.com for details. This message sponsored by Braided River.
Time is 3:34 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is MK McNaughton from the Canvas Community Arts Studio here to talk about junk.
My favorite topic.
So you're having a junk day this Saturday from 1 to 4?
From 1 to 4 this Saturday. It's a family event meant for adults to come with kids and make art out of junk.
What do you mean by junk?
Well, I'm pretty open to anything, as long as it's not too hard for me to get rid of afterwards if no one takes it or uses it. Really, junk, treasures can be anything, and we all have bizarre collections in our drawers of, like, somebody brought in goldfish food containers today. They had clearly 15 bottles of them. It seemed like a good bottle to save for some reason, but that reason never came up, so this is it, junk day.
It happens a lot at our house, too.
Yeah, those little tiny spoons that come in the cool sorbets that Costco sells. I save them. I never use them. I eat with a big spoon, but I don't know, hang a couple hundred of those around a light and you have a chandelier. So if you have old cat-eye glass frames or broken watches that we can take apart for the tiny parts, really the sky's the limit when it comes to repurposed art.
Or the fill, the landfill is the limit.
The landfill. Well, we're trying to avoid using the landfill. And Friends of Recycling has offered the canvas some financial support to buy tools that will assist us with repurposed art projects, trying to keep some of this stuff from the landfill, do something with it. So we have a great list of activities planned that I'll tell you about. And thanks to Friends of Recycling, we're going to be able to buy a few materials, a few things we need to buy to help make this happen. Most of it's repurposed, though. Want me to launch into it?
Yes, please.
Yeah. We have screen printing, and there's a really wonderful new AmeriCorps volunteer, Katie Bodie, who's an art major just out of school. She's here working in Alaska for the year, and she's a screen printer. So she's coming up with a junk monster design, and she'll have that on a screen, and you can bring your own surface to print onto. It can be anything flat. It could be a T-shirt. You want to print this junk monster canvas logo on a T-shirt, or we'll have paper if you have a flat piece of wood, a chair. Bring in a chair. If you want a junk monster on it, bring something in to make a print. We'll have a mosaic table. We have lots of good, broken, beautiful pieces of stuff and wood boards, little wood boards. So you can make a little trivet that you can use on your kitchen table. Same night. And I'm going to buy, thanks to Friends of Recycling, some... I can't think of the name. It's not mortar. It's the stuff you stick around mosaic. You know, Jeff, what is it? Well, I'll buy some. So you can hot glue your little pieces down on a piece of wood, and then we'll have the grout you need to put around it. We'll have a wire sculpting table. We have a bunch of telephone wire that somebody pulled out of the construction project when they were building the parking garage. They called me and said, "Do you want this telephone wire?" And I said, "Yes." So it's the real stuff from Telephone Hill.
Do you get a lot of phone calls like that?
I do, actually. I love them. I'm very proud of them. Sherry McDonald is going to do paper making. We have she has some shredded recycled paper, and you're welcome to bring other special little things. So she has generously volunteered on her own, donated some backing so people can make their own paper and take it away with them that day. She's donating the felt to help carry away your creations with you. We have a bunch of that rubber stuff that goes along the bottom of the wall by the carpet that is really great for making linoleum prints. It's nice and flexible. So we have a couple of rolls of that will let people carve up and make little prints. You can make your own little stamp with that. And then I'm really inspired by some shadow art I've seen. If you Google junk art on the web, you'll see some shadow art. People stack up piles of junk and then shine a light through it against the wall and create these amazing images, figures, or there's a landscape that I saw that I used in our flyer. So I'm going to set that up. You can bring junk or grab stuff from around the studio and make a little assemblage, and we'll see what it looks like with the make your own cool shadows.
That's happening on Shadow Day?
Shadow Day. That could turn into a whole day of its own. But we'll have this all set up, and you can just come and create art. And it's a free event. We welcome donations to help support Canvas programming and the materials that we're providing. But it's really meant to be a time for adults and kids to come in and create together, and with my favorite medium, junk.
It's happening this Saturday from 1 to 4. Should people bring their own junk, or they should just find the junk that's there?
They can bring junk. We are definitely welcoming donations. Whether you come to Junk Day or not, you can drop stuff off at the canvas between now and 1 o'clock. Or bring it with you. I do want to get the word out that if you want to print on a T-shirt or print on a whatever surface, bring that surface with you. We have paper, of course, but if you want to bring your own stuff to print on, feel free. That will be fun.
You've got some other things going on at the campus?
We do. I just printed out our October calendar, and it's up on the web, canvasarts.org. We have a bunch of classes starting at the beginning of October. There is large-scale figure painting. We'll have one model for 6 weeks, and people will be working on large canvases. So a nice opportunity to do a really developed long-term piece, working with Chris Taylor, so a fabulous teaching artist. We have also chiaroscuro, which is, finally, I'm proud to say I can pronounce. It's an Italian style of studying light and shadow on an object. So working with charcoal and drawing, that class is a four-week class starting the first Wednesday in October. We have marimba and bookmaking, and we have a sweater reclamation class. So if you have ever accidentally washed a sweater and it shrunk up...
Never.
Or you have one that's in bad shape that you can't get rid of, but you want to do something with it, go ahead and wash it and shrink it and bring it in, and you can make anything. We have a new teacher who will help you turn that into mittens or a coffee cozy, scarves, bags. So she'll have ideas. In week one, you'll come up with your upcycled project, and then in week two, you can embellish with needle felting, dry felting on felted sweaters is a fun thing to do. These little needles that you can kind of stab, and it's very satisfying, all ages, little kids through adult, stabbing art. And we also have a bunch of pottery classes coming up. We have Halloween pottery, which is hand building. Create your own jack-o'-lantern or haunted house. My son, 15-year-old, said we should make a skull and put a candle in it, which I think is a great idea. I think so. That class with Louise is a two-week class on Sunday, October 9th, and it's meant to also be a class where an adult and kid can come in together, or someone can come in independently. And we also have wheel throwing classes for kids and adults starting up in October. So check us out.
A lot of stuff going on in the Canvas Community Art Studio there at the corner of 3rd and Seward Street, downtown Juneau.
Yeah.
Phone number?
586-1750.
And a website again, please.
Canvasarts.org.
That's Junk Day this Saturday. The time again?
The time is 1 to 4 for Junk Day, and I can't wait.
Bring your own junk or get it there.
Bring your own junk or we'll have plenty, too.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for coming down the station.
Comes from listeners like you and from the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Time is 3:44 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Nancy DeTourney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, talking about all things art in the capital city this weekend.
And a few other things, too.
It's a heavy responsibility. Can you assume
that? I'm not sure. Boy, after yesterday, we can take anything on, right?
That howling wind.
It was pretty rough yesterday. It's a beautiful day out there, and it's going to be a lovely weekend. So a couple of things. Absentee voting is now open. We have an important election coming up on the 6th or the 4th or someday like that, next Tuesday in a bit. Anyway, you can begin voting now if you think you're going to be away and not miss it out. We have tonight at 7:30, the first in the Alaska Native Cultures film series for this year at the Egan Lecture Hall out on Auk Lake campus, The Aleut Story. And if you'd like more information about that, 796-6114. You can still do the historic downtown walking tour, and that's going to run through the 30th. So if you have been meaning to do that and suddenly realize that, yes, it's fall out and you might not get to it, so now's a good time because the weather is going to pick up a little bit. Tomorrow at noon, Alice Branton is playing the Kimball organ in the state office building. That's for free. Juno's Pathways to Prevent Violence at Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority on Jenkins Drive, 586-6623 for more information about that. And it's Juno Preparedness Expo opens. Are you ready? It's at Centennial Hall, and it also runs on Saturday. So all sorts of interesting pieces of information and vendors and whatnot that you can talk to and make sure that your family is prepared for any sorts of emergencies. And after yesterday's wind, when my lawn furniture went by at about 4 feet above ground, I can see why we should be ready. At 3 o'clock, out at the university in the Egan Lecture Hall, Political Relations Between Europe and the Arab World is the lecture that's out there with Pablo Blessa. You can get more information about that from the provost at 796-6486. It's the Charter Schools Family Night at Zach Gordon Youth Center. Starts at 3:30. It's free for charter school families, 586-2635. It was going to be what happened. I've made some mistakes here. There's basic skate skills over at the Treadwell Arena at 6:30 on Friday. There's 6 weekly lessons, $90. You can get more information about, they have several different classes coming up, 523-9115. It's also tryouts for Juno Roller Girls at 6:30 over at the Marie Drake Gym. You're supposed to bring your own gear. If you need more information about Roller Girls, you can go to recruitment at JunoRollerGirls.com and send them questions that you may have. It's Kids Night Out, Arts for Youth Dance Studio. This is an opportunity, $3 a child per hour. This is a fundraising event to support the TAFY Stars dance team. And I think they'll be doing this kind of regularly. You can bring your children by, and there'll be entertainment, dance, movies, some refreshments you can purchase for them, and have an evening out. At 7 o'clock, Peggy Shoemaker, who is the Alaska Writer Laureate, will be the speaker at the evening at Egan. This is in collaboration with the Juneau Public Libraries. That is out at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's free, 7 o'clock. More information, 586-0434. And it's opening night for the Perseverance Theater's 39 Steps and Their Season. This is going to run through October 16th, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, don't think just because you have till October 16th that you can put it off till then. I would suggest going online or calling the theater and getting your tickets now for the dates that you want. 324-2421, it promises to be a great season, and this is going to be a great play. At 9:30, a magic trip, Ken Kesey's Search for a Cool Place, is playing over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon on Friday. Saturday, we kick off Band Book Week. I love that week. It's always my favorite. You should go to the library and pick out a book that's banned and just see what you think. It's also at 9 o'clock in the morning, National Public Lands Day. Meet out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center at 10 a.m. There'll be a ribbon cutting at the Nugget Falls Trailhead, followed by some light trail maintenance after that. They're going to be serving a little breakfast and lunch. I suggest you bring your own gear. also want to make sure that people realize that the Pavitt Fitness Run, which was scheduled at 9 o'clock, has been canceled. The Saturday thing goes on over at the Juneau Economic Development Council. That's at 9:30 in the morning, 523-2300 if you want more information about that. And then, as we mentioned, the Juneau Preparedness Expo is going on at Centennial Hall from 10 until 4. There's more skate skills over at Treadwell at 11:45. The Red Cross is offering a series of training sessions throughout, and it kicks off with the expo at 1 o'clock. Red Cross Shelter Operations Training. If you want more information and want to get on the list for the different trainings that Red Cross is offering this month, 463-5713. Family Junk Day, were you just talking about that?
We don't know.
I love junk. I got a lot of it.
Some lawn furniture.
It's junk now. At 3 o'clock, it's 350 Day, the International Day of Climate Action out at the UAS Rec Center. Bring your own alternative transportation solutions. There's going to be relay races, prizes, all sorts of stuff. Some presentations by SEAC and DOT, and this goes on till 7. I think there's barbecue. At 5:30, there's a Native Foods Reception, which is being sponsored by the Human Rights Commission. That's in the Glacier View Room at the UAS campus. 780-4075, and also related to that at 7 o'clock, 50 Years Involved, A Native Perspective. Byron Malott will be speaking at the Egan Lecture Hall. There's a 70s party fundraiser for the Coast Guard Military Family Association at the Baranoff Treadwell Room at 7 o'clock, and also Tom Locher and Wayne Norland are over at T.K. McGuire's. There's just a lot of stuff going on. On Sunday, there's a bevy of book groups at Hearthside Books. I think this is just in time for Bound Book Week, but you get to, if you are a part of a book group or you're interested in seeing what book groups are out there and what book groups are reading, this is an opportunity for everybody to get together and compare book lists. This is at 78 Nugget Mall, Hearthside Books, 789-2750 for more information. And over at the Jack, we're having a little fundraiser and party. It's the Fiddlehead Cookbook's 20th anniversary. We're going to have desserts and beer and wine and all kinds of people there to share memories and whatnot. I've got all four authors are going to be there. We have some hardback books. So come on down. And Kari Griven and Tom Locher will be performing, giving us music. It should be a good time. We're inviting people to bring their most loved Fiddlehead Cookbook, and they'll have a little contest. And whoever's is kind of the most falling apart will win some sort of prize.
Is there going to be North Douglas chocolate cake served?
There is going to be North Douglas chocolate cake. There is, if you go onto our website, there's already bidding going on for the North Douglas chocolate cake and Ann Foster's lemon cake, which has personally been one of my favorites for years. Ann Foster herself is going to make it. You can begin bidding on these items right now. Nancy Hemingway is making the North Douglas chocolate cake. Anybody?
Just one?
Just one.
Come on, Nancy.
I'm sorry. You want that? You have to bid on it. There will be other things. There will be a lot of things there to eat and drink and have a good time. And mostly just share your funny stories about the Fiddlehead. I'm sure you have a few.
I want to mention real quick before I forget about the Above and Beyond Alaska folks who did the kayaking expeditions.
Oh, yeah.
They're having a sale of their kayaks, used kayaks.
Really? Where's
this? Weekend.
This
weekend. I believe it's out in Ock Bay area.
Okay. Somewhere out there, there's some used kayaks. Maybe it will be in connection with this alternative transportation thing that's going on. On Monday, it is, I think you might have talked about this last week or recently, the nominations for the Aware Women of Distinction are due. Also, just getting towards the end of the time that you can tour the Ted Stevens Marine Research Center, another thing that's free, and they're going to run it through September 30th. So if you're interested, this is your last week. We are having a candidate forum in conjunction with the Juneau Education Association over at the Jack Monday evening at 5, from 5 until 7. This is an opportunity for you to meet the candidates who are running for school board and assembly. You wanted to talk?
Just a little bit. Is it okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because we did a candidate forum with the League of Women Voters last night from the Assembly Chambers. And if you missed that, you can catch it online at our website, www.ktwo.org.
We should be well-informed voters by the time this is all over with, I think. It's important. We have a lot of interesting things coming up in the community, so it's good to be well-informed, and there will be refreshments at the thing on Monday, so if you've missed any of these, come on down. Though the questions that we've posed to them are posted on our website, so some of them have sent their written responses, so you can see those as well. Raintree Quilting is giving more lessons on learning to sew. Class number 2 is at 6 o'clock on Monday. If you're interested in information about their programs, 789-7900. And at 7 o'clock, there's a beginning belly dance class. This is so exciting. North Street Studio, it's $80 for 8 weeks of lessons. And if you would like more information about that, go to the daughtersofthenewmoon.com website. Let's see. On Tuesday, I'm sure we have something exciting going on. Of course we do. At 5 o'clock, Amy Gulick, who wrote the Salmon in the Trees book, will be, all of her stuff is going to be hanging over at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, and she will be giving a presentation. This is sponsored by the Tongass National Forest. It's free, and it's at 5 o'clock, an opportunity to hear what she has to say and see her stuff, which is fabulous. Also, the Marie Drake Planetarium is doing the history of astronomy at 6:30. Very excited to see that they've come up with their own nonprofit and are doing lots of programming over at the Marie Drake Planetarium. It's a little unknown thing that we have here, sort of. Let's see. There's Tai Chi for Life over at the Jack on Wednesday at 5:30. Lost in Wound Socket is the Recovery Month Film Festival film for them last week. It's at 6:30. It's at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. The Alaska Permanent Fund trustees are having a economic forum on Thursday at 4. The Juneau People for Peace and Veterans for Peace and Northern Light United Church are having Nuclear Bombs, Budgets, and You, a political discussion at 7 o'clock at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. So there's not a... It's not a day that we can just sit home and eat spaghetti. I'm sorry.
Or North Douglas chocolate chip.
Well, you got to get on there and bid on that. I'll tell you what, you know, there's going to be cheesecake, and there's going to be, I think there might be an orange wine spice cake coming. It's been a long time since I had one of those, but please don't overbid me on the Ann Foster lemon cake. That's all I ask.
Nancy DeTuna, thank you so much for coming down and talking about artistic events happening in Juneau and other events, too. If people want to go to your website, they can submit their own events.
They can email both you and I, right?
I think so, not me personally.
Ours is Juneau Arts, I think. I can't remember what our email address is. And yours is something else new, too. I think ours is JunoArtsCouncil.gmail.
I think if you go to our website, you'll find out all the information.
Yeah, it's right there. And it's real simple. Just put it the name in the subject line, and then your email, or all the dates and times and locations, and Gmail just figures it out.
And if you can, write it down a description of your event so it makes sense for people reading it on the radio.
Because you use it as your PSAs.
That's right.
Okay, then.
Thank you for going by.
Thanks for having me.
Time is 3:58 and you are tuned to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1, Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1 and K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. An excursion inlet and Icy Strait here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau and Digital Channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will be your guest host. He'll be interviewing Peggy Shoemaker, who will be making presentations at the Evening at Egan series and also at the Downtown Library this weekend. Lynn also interviewed people involved in 350 Day at the University of Alaska Southeast. And James Wyckoff will be here to talk about the community garage sale schedule for October 1st at Centennial Hall. At Writer's Almanac, music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, a slight chance of showers in the evening and rain likely later on. Low temperatures around 44 degrees. Forecast for Friday, more rain with high temperatures around 52 degrees. Friday night, more rain with low temperatures around 44 degrees. And the forecast for Saturday looks like cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Sunday through Monday looks like mostly cloudy skies is the forecast. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today. Don't forget the Alaska Identity Project with your host Adrian Lopez starts at 7 o'clock here on KTOO News.